Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, September 5th. I'm Alan Chartok. The Trump administration today formally announced it will end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, also called DACA, putting an expiration date on the legal protections granted to roughly 800,000 people known as Dreamers who entered the country illegally as children. In the studio to discuss this move and immigration in general are Sianna Freeman-Tolbert, an immigration attorney, Sarah Rogerson of Albany Law School. We want to hear from you. What are your thoughts about DACA and the president's approach to immigration? 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at WAMC.org. Your calls and all the other stuff coming up right after this news. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. The Trump administration today formally announced it will end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, also called DACA, putting an expiration date on the legal protections granted to roughly 800,000 people known as Dreamers, who entered the country illegally as children. The administration is letting the program wind down in 6 months, placing the onus on a sharply divided Congress to enact President Obama's executive action into law. In the studio to discuss DACA and immigration are Sianna Freeman-Tolbert and Sarah Rogerson. Sianna is a immigration attorney with Tully Rinke, working in upstate New York. She's dealt with U.S. citizenship and immigration services, as well as U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Sarah is a professor at Albany Law School and directs the Immigration Law Clinic. Sianna and Sarah, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then that takes care of that. The number to call, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Who wants to go first and tell me what you make of the president's announcement today? Sianna, you go first. Okay.
We're both pointing at each other.
Volunteering.
I will not say I'm surprised. I've been prepping my clients for this to happen in the future. By doing so, I've been kind of cautious about having people apply for DACA, do initial applications for DACA. And so we're definitely not surprised, and we've been looking at other avenues for relief for our clients. So that's what we've been doing in the legal aspect of it to prepare our clients for this, because we knew it was coming down the road. We've been seeing Department of Homeland Security tightening their belts around people who have stay of removals. And so we expected that any sort of other deferred action was going to be rescinded eventually. We also have seen it with, I was just thinking of something else. But we've been expecting it. So my clients personally, we've been preparing and looking for other forms of relief.
So what are some of the other forms of relief?
Well, there's a few on the table for them. If they are currently in immigration court, one of the forms of relief that they have available is cancellation of removal for non-OPRs if they qualify. In that case, they have to have an extreme and unusual hardship for a spouse, parent, or child.
I have no idea what you said when you said non-OPRs. What did that mean?
For non-lawful permanent residents, I'm sorry.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So cancellation removal is an option for them. Another option that not many people know about is the U visa. If you've been a victim of a crime here in the U.S. and you reported it to police and you were helpful to the police and law enforcement agencies, you may be eligible for a U visa. However, the U visa is backlogged at least 2 to 3 years now, so wow. It takes a while to get it.
So does that mean if you squeal on somebody else, you get a break?
No. If you, if you've been a victim of assault, battery, domestic violence, yes, and you reported it to police, because it's an opportunity. The public policy behind it was to allow immigrants here in the country to feel comfortable with law enforcement.
Wow.
So there's that avenue. And then the third avenue is similar to asylum. It's like withholding of removal. If you have a fear of returning to your home country, that may be an option for them as well.
Okay. Sarah.
I would only add to that special immigrant juvenile status, which some of our clients in the immigration law
clinic. What's that?
So that is a special form of relief for immigrant children who have been abused, abandoned, or neglected by one or both parents. So they would be in a similar age range as the individuals who are impacted by DACA, because you have to be under the age of 21 to apply for special immigrant juvenile status. So we have a couple of clients that were filing simultaneous applications, much like Sienna is doing with her clients. And I would say that the country is going to be experiencing this alphabet soup of immigration, which immigration practitioners have been practicing in for a long time. The immigration code is as complex, if not more, than the tax code.
Wow.
So these are just a handful of options that we've identified for our clients here in upstate New York, but there could be many, many more. And the unfortunate likelihood is that for many, many, many of these folks, there is no alternative. And it is a big, big question mark about what will happen to them on March 5th, 2018, now that they've handed over all of their identifying information to the government on this good faith promise that the United States government wouldn't deport them. So that is an enormous looming question that was not answered or even begun to be answered in today's announcement.
Now, when I was a younger man, which is many centuries ago, and Vietnam was going on, a lot of people looked for the holes in the law and tried to get through with them. And I dare say some of them may even have created a few, you know, of their own. Do we expect this, as lawyers, do we expect to see that some of that stuff happening here?
It's not possible in immigration land. The form of civil disobedience in these types of cases, really, the best chance is that it's very difficult to deport 800,000 people all at once.
And by the way, before you came in, Sienna, Sarah was talking about a new estimate on how much it would cost if you got rid of all the 800,000.
Right. So the Cato Institute, which is not known for liberal leanings, in fact, it's a libertarian and conservative organization, yeah, which is founded by at least one, if not both, of the Koch brothers. They recently released a report that it was called their DACA impact study on the economy. $460 billion
no.
in lost GDP over the next decade.
Mm-hmm. Well, say it again.
$460 billion in lost GDP over the next decade. It eliminates over 700,000 people from the workforce.
Okay.
That's a big chunk of change.
It sure is. Let's go to Michelle and see what she has to say in Albany. Okay, Michelle, you're on. Go.
Oh, hello. My name is Michelle, and I'm calling just because nobody has seemed to talk about this. When I was in graduate school at the University of Minnesota, I had a roommate from Brooklyn. She was Italian. She told me this story, that her father had jumped boat, and evidently a lot of Italians had jumped boat. In other words, they came over to New York. They stayed there. They were illegal immigrants. They were all given an amnesty and taken to, I think she said, Puerto Rico, because this was in the late 60s and early 70s, she told me the story, and given papers and then came back legally to the United States. And I don't know why they don't talk about this, that this is not the first time there have been illegal aliens, you know, immigrants in this country. And I shouldn't use the word alien, but anyway, illegal, and they're allowed to stay. And I just don't understand. Is it racism that they're not allowing these people to stay? There was a lot of racism against Italians at that time, but they did allow them to stay eventually.
Okay. Now, Michelle, we'll let the talented ladies of the panel answer. Who wants to go
okay,
first?
Thank you.
Well, I'll go ahead and jump in on this one. So May Nye, who is an immigration historian, has written volumes on this mm-hmm. cycle, this idea of whoever the newcomers are, they're the new out-group. So you're absolutely right. There is a strong element of racism by design. Even in the announcement, there were several legal inaccuracies in Attorney General Sessions' statement this afternoon.
And Sessions is very much for coming down hard on all of this.
Right. Yeah. And it's being couched in terms that are misleading, sort of casting new immigrants or people who have recently arrived here as criminals. This is not a new narrative. This is something that those Italians likely faced back then in the 60s and 70s.
So why is that racism? In other words, if Hispanics, are coming into the country, not everybody's of color. Why do we call that racism?
Well, because we're talking about a specific group of people who are being who are experiencing prejudice and who are being subverted in the social order based on the color of their skin, really, in these circumstances, right? So the immigration code shifted after the Italian migrations. Since the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there's been different waves of of immigration reform. And the code is very, very different now than it was then. So these types of policies are designed specifically to carve out certain populations now. It's not just a lack of proper immigration codes or procedures. That has been brought a long way. And of course, there's a lot of improvement that needs to be done.
So is there a potential for court action here based on that racism?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Yeah, and that's why I specialize.
A lot of that depends on proving intent. That's always the kicker.
Yeah.
And so unless we can prove that this policy was promulgated specifically to target individuals of a particular ethnic or racial background, and really that's a tough case, again, by design, because they designed these policies to just so happen to include a certain group of people.
Okay, Michelle, thank you for that. And Sienna, when we come back, you'll get first up. I didn't mean to leave you out. We have to take a break.
Support for WAMC comes from The Barn at Egremont Village Inn, presenting Open Mic Night Wednesday, September 6th. On Saturday, September 9th, blues music with Chris Bergson at 8 p.m., open for dinner at 5. TheEgremontBarn.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames, where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Stammel String Instruments, downtown Amherst and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows, restorations and appraisals, open Tuesday through Saturday, stammelstring.com. The Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. And Karen Lindstrom, Resiliency Life Coaching via phone or Skype, helping people recognize negative thinking and behaviors that interfere with personal fulfillment, providing tools to build resilience for life development. ROMMP.com.
Ooh. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We go to Ed in Seoul Point. And Sienna, remember, I told you you were next up to answer this question. No matter what the question is, you get to answer it. Okay, here we go. Ask the question.
Okay, it's more in the way of a comment. As we saw this morning, the positioning of the Republicans, both in the administration and in the commentariat, is that this is somehow a problem Obama created. He overstepped by, setting up the DACA program. And by implication, they want to, with their base at least, blame it all on Obama, that he is the guy, as it were, who let all these people into the country. However, if you do the math on it, I haven't seen a study, I'm sure there's a study, if you do the math on it in terms of cohorts, almost certainly the majority of these people, since they have to be in college or in the military, came in during the Bush administration and, would have been brought by their parents or whatever. I'm just looking at the age cohorts. And so some pushback should be made on the meme that's going to be out there that somehow Obama has saddled us with this problem.
Sienna?
What I'll say is that I know we were just discussing prior that there's been two waves of migration, immigration into the U.S., big waves of children coming in. But what we have to remember about these children and the recipients of DACA is that they are children that came not of their own will to the U.S., and that's who we were trying to protect. And Congress has been unable to pass for the past few years comprehensive immigration reform. And so DACA was a response to that and a response to this wave of minors in the U.S. who didn't have any sort of documentation. Because what's happening is when you come here undocumented and you reach about 15, that's when you realize that you can't get a driver's license, you can't work, and that's when you turn around to your parents and you're, what can I do? What's my status? And that's what we were finding happening more and more coming during this time period. And so that's who we're really responding to, and that's what it's all about, is these young kids who are trying to work and be productive members of the society, who America, that's all they know.
Yeah, I would just add to that. I recently wrote an article, a Law Review article, on some of the history at the border. And there's, when you talk about the problems around the numbers of undocumented people in the United States, there's plenty of blame to go around. All right. We have Congress who hasn't passed anything significant since just after 9/11. And going all the way back to the 1920s, which is really when border police first showed up on the scene, literally on horseback, there are documented cases of them grabbing children and the children screaming and them being let go and let into this country with the Border Patrol agents writing that they couldn't control these children. And so I found that to be ridiculous because these are the adults, the law enforcement who are on the border. And so children, for whatever reason, have been this flashpoint for the failure of our immigration system since it started back in the 1920s and even before then. Children were cabined off in at Ellis Island. Children have come in waves from Cuba, from Haiti. They experienced very different treatment than the kids who came through Ellis Island. Children and immigration pose these unique issues for us and really are literally going to challenge us for our future reforms and what the future America will look like.
So what's the appetite in Congress, do you think?
I know that Senator Graham has something on the table called the Bridge Act, which basically would give them a sort of temporary protected status here in the U.S. while they figure out what other immigration relief that they are going to receive. However, we come against the same wall that we always have that we discussed earlier. What relief do these children have? So even if you're giving them temporary protected status again, where do we go from there and when does that end?
So now we're going to go to David in New Paltz. All right, David, you're on.
Thank you, Alan. Sure. I just wanted to mention that I think the Republicans fear that the people coming across the border will be potential Democrats. So they want to limit the amount of Democrats that are coming to this country. And also there's a second fear that they have, that if the Spanish population in the border states that used to be, by the way, Mexico, will start to vote secession from the Union and becoming part of Mexico again. So I think those are the two fears that the Republicans have.
Well, they may be. Not that I am an expert in this, but I got to tell you, I think the first one is a very reasonable hypothesis, which is they see these guys as potential Democrats or as Democrats. But you know, the Hispanic community does have a number of Republicans in them who are quite conservative. And so you can't, you know, stereotype completely here. Either of you have something?
Yeah, I haven't seen any recent polls, and it's hard to poll an undocumented population for a lot of obvious reasons. But we do have information about voting patterns, and I'll just confirm what you're saying. You know, the political leanings are all over the map. I think what's interesting about that particular point in this case is that DACA doesn't afford a pathway to citizenship.
Yeah,
it's prosecutorial discretion. They invented a term called DACA-mented.
Yeah, they're not going to become citizens. They're just not going to be deported.
Correct. Yeah. So they would not be eligible to vote. That's the you have to be a citizen in order to vote.
Nevertheless, David's point is a good one in that we know traditionally Republicans tried to hold down the franchise. And there's no question about that. You know, those all the laws and everything else that you find, it was a staple of Jim Crow, you know, in the South. And I think, you know, it still goes on. But he didn't say that that was what it was. He said he thought that that's what they feared.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I think he's right. Shannon, do you have anything to add?
Nothing to add.
Okay. Thanks, David.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. And now I'm looking at who's been hanging on the most. It would be Ray in Bethlehem. All right. Ray, you're on. Go, Ray.
Hi. So I guess one of the things that I'm trying to understand is I guess from a perspective of the DACA recipients, they're allowed to be in the country and work. So I guess if they're here in the country, I guess the program gets absolved. Couldn't their employers kind of isn't there some type of program where they can kind of, like, you know, put their name in the hat or kind of petition or something for them to kind of stick around?
I'm going to answer your question. Yes. Yes, an employer can petition for them. But once again, I have to give you a little bit of alphabet soup. There's visas such as the H-1B, the H-2B, and they also can do an EB if they have enough education, right? So that we're dealing with a whole different unemployment-based immigration. We see that they're tightening their belts on that end, too, in terms of requirements in order to be eligible for and the amount of visas that are allocated out there and how whether they can meet those requirements. But also you have to remember that when the employer is petitioning for a worker, they have to go through Department of Labor for the most part to certify that they have already advertised, that they don't have anyone else that is eligible to work here in the U.S.
Interesting.
And what you're looking at is young 20 to 25-year-old working at McDonald's or your local Barnes & Nobles, and that may be a hard obstacle for the employer to overcome.
Yeah, I would just add a few more statistics from that Cato Institute report because I love citing conservatives on these issues.
So did Mario Cuomo, by the way. Every time he turned around, he was quoting the Cato Institute. Yeah,
it's not a usual line for me, but on this issue, it's just so interesting. The average recipient, under stats cited by Cato, is employed, earning $17 an hour, and on average, 22 years old. So if they're savvy enough, if their employers are savvy enough, if they have access to counsel, if they have money to pay lawyers, then the employer certainly would be able to help out.
So do they go to clinics if they can't afford lawyers?
Well, what happens when you're talking about employment-based petitions is that the employer is the client for the attorney.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they have to pay for all the legal fees, and they handle all of that aspect of it.
Yeah. Is it difficult to convince them to do that? I mean, in other words, it depends, I suppose.
It depends on the employer.
Yeah, and on the situation, how much they need the,
exactly.
need the labor.
Exactly.
And right now, it's interesting because right now, more than any time in recent history, there is very low unemployment. So therefore, you think that the employers would be more likely to go that route.
Well, you see, the Saratoga track is sort of a really great example of this. You have a lot of the workers on the backstretch who have participated through their employer in these employment-based visas. But you have a whole bunch of a penumbra, another circle of workers who are not covered by those visas, either because their skills don't qualify, because it's work that nobody else wants to do, or it's work that, quite frankly, the employer doesn't want to put the cost into investing in. And it's sort of like a don't ask, don't tell relationship there.
So how about this stuff about work that nobody else wants to do? Is that good for getting certified or is that bad for getting certified?
That's good for getting certified because you can prove to the Department of Labor that you need workers. But then you're faced with the allocation, so to speak, of a visas. Is there enough visas available for these people to come over? That's the problem that we're facing. So, and it's a timing, too. It's timing. It's applying to get the certification in a certain amount of time. It just makes it a very hard turnaround sometimes for employers. And you're talking about people in the back stretch trying to get it done for Saratoga in a timely fashion.
Sure.
It can be very hard when you weren't expecting it, especially.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We go to Todd. All right, Todd, you're on.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
We're good. We're all good. Go ahead.
Well, I just have to make the comment every time this topic comes up, it drives me nuts. But, you know, I just wanted to remind everyone that we're the illegal immigrants here, and I'm sure all the Native Americans are rolling in their grave when they watch us come up with all this legislation and make all these rules. And I'd just like to hear what people say. How have we gotten to this point where we pretend that this doesn't, this never happened? Thank you for your time.
All right. Who wants to answer? Well, it's pretty obvious that he's right, right? Except for one thing, and that is that the Native Americans probably came over a land bridge also. Say that they were immigrants also. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and there are still Native Americans living, never, you know, not to speak of those who are rolling in their grave, but those who are, you know, experiencing secondary oppression of our government as we speak.
Absolutely.
Who have to be looking out from the reservation thinking, you know, I don't know what they're thinking. I have friends who have represented some of the nations, and it's really, if we could get to the root of this problem, if we could come together as Americans on this issue, we'd be such a better country for it, not just backward looking, but forward looking as well.
So why don't we? It's just also, we said, use the word racism before, but also otherism, which is practiced by the Trump administration.
Sure. It's how he got elected. It's preying on people's basest instincts and fear, which is on the rise here in America.
Yeah, yeah. Sienna, anything?
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go to Guillermo in Albany, and I know I murdered his name, and I am sorry. Go ahead. You're up.
Thanks. I'm inspired to hear that folks are calling in and in very optimistic fashion are trying to come up with ways to say, like, how are we going to move on from this repeal? But I honestly believe that we should give ourselves a little bit of time, a moment of outrage, and think about what is happening in terms of families and people, neighbors and people in our community. I'm, as a son of a non-documented worker, as a son of a father who was deported, I lived in fear for years that the day would come where my parents would be taken away from me. And now as a father, who worries about his kids, I can only imagine the kind of fear that children, young adults, parents right now are going through this very moment. And I'd like to reach out to folks in the Capital Region to muster up a bit of this outrage. I'm part of a group called COSECHA. It's COSECHA. It's a national movement that's fighting for the dignity, respect, and permanent protection of all immigrants. And we are holding a protest in Albany today at 4 p.m. We're going to be gathering at Wellenberg Park. That's between Clinton and Broadway on North Pearl. That's Clinton and Broadway on North Pearl. And I know that the Capital Region cares about its children and they care about their neighbors. And the reason why I know this is that when we had the Muslim ban, when we had this so-called travel ban, we came out in droves and we showed our outrage and we showed that we were ready to resist unjust, racist policy. And I expect no less from my friends and my neighbors.
Okay,
and
just go, whoa.
A true call to action.
You know, just give it to us really quickly. Where is this again? Where is this going to be at 4 o'clock?
This is in Albany today, 4 p.m., Wallenberg Park, and that's on North Pearl between Clinton and Broadway.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so gang, do you want to add anything to this?
I will see him there. I had that on my radar. These groups, there are several groups that are active in the Capital District who are really doing great work getting people organized. A lot of people who have been impacted, like our caller, who are related to someone who has been deported or who these policies affect directly. And a lot of this movement, the Dreamer movement, was inspired by and led by individuals who are impacted, undocumented young people.
Sure.
They led this movement. And that's, you can't say that about all movements,
no.
But this one has. And so for us to get in line behind them and show them how we support them, they can help us move this mountain. And so I'll be there.
Also, in terms of moving the mountain, there's going to be litigation coming down about this, I'm sure. Remember during the travel ban, there was litigation from universities saying why they needed a diverse student body and what these immigrants did for them. In the same way, leaders of industry have already started speaking out against this. And so my hope is that when these leaders of industry and Fortune 500 companies speak out as well, we'll start seeing more litigation about our need for immigrants and the immigrant population and some sort of reform in Congress will come from that.
You're listening to Sienna Freeman-Tolbert and Sarah Rogerson, our wonderful guests today, and I'm pretty impressed, I'll tell you that much. So thank you for that. And now we'll go to Chris in Pennsylvania. All right, Chris in Pennsylvania, you're on.
Yeah, how you doing? I just caught part of the show. I got out of work, and I seen the main lights on immigration. My wife's from British Columbia, Canada, and we've been married now for 13 years. I got with her when I was in the military, and it's cost us thousands and thousands of dollars to keep her immigration, and her green card runs out in less than a year. And lately, a lot of people have been coming over getting free citizenship. And I'm wondering, is there something I'm missing? Like, going about this, last time we paid hundreds of dollars for a company to do the paperwork for us, and all they literally did was print it all up for us, and we still had to fill it all out and wasted a ton of money. Is there any type of program or something that a cheaper way around it? Like, she's only coming from Canada. She's been here for almost 15 years.
Okay.
Legally.
Okay, we got it.
To keep her legal, it's very expensive.
We got it. Sarah?
Yeah, definitely. I see you're calling from Pennsylvania. In New York, they recently passed a law making it a crime to mislead people who are in your situation and to overcharge them for immigration services. So that's something to look into in Pennsylvania.
Okay. I'm actually, I have an address in New York. I have two dual residents in Pennsylvania and New York, but I keep my registration, everything's in New York, actually. I'm there more than Pennsylvania.
And it's also important to note that if your wife has been here for over 3 years, that she may be qualified for citizenship. So you need to look into that avenue as well and, unfortunately, consult an attorney.
Which you are.
Which I am. But he seems leery of. But we're all not bad. And, you know, there has been DHS, Department of Homeland Security themselves, have talked about notarios and people that prey on the immigrant population. So you just want to make sure that you go and find a qualified attorney to lead you down the right path. Because other than filing fees, you should only be paying their attorney's fees for their time to prepare the forms.
Sarah, real fast. Did you
just real quick, these are the types. These types of policies just incentivize notarios and others in terms of taking advantage of populations who are in desperate need of help.
Chris, thank you. Okay, we're going to take a short break. 1-800-348-2551. Write it down, because your chances of getting in now are excellent. 1-800-348-2551. Take it away, Zachary.
Support for WMC comes from the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting the opportunity on September 23rd at 2 p.m. to chat with staff about aspects of living next door to the preserve, albanypinebush.org. Coleman Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, chandharchitects.com. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, working to connect food, farm, and community, organically grown CSA shares now available for the fall 2017 season, farmproject.org. The New York Military Academy, Cornwall, a co-ed boarding school that strives to offer a safe, nurturing environment combined with a rigorous, academically challenging curriculum, now accepting applications for fall 2017, nyma.org. And Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs, in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com.
And we are back, and we have wonderful guests in the studio today, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert and Sarah Rogerson. Sienna's a lawyer, an immigration lawyer, and Sarah is at the law school where she does, God's work.
I direct the immigration law clinic. I work with I teach students to handle these immigration cases. It's their first thing that they ever do under a limited practice order.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really great. Okay, we got a lot of calls coming in. All of a sudden, don't ask me why, but there they are, perhaps because I told them to. We'll go to Barbara in Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Okay, Barbara, you're on. What's up?
Hi. I'm just calling with one comment and one question. My comment is that this country has a long history of being non-helpful to children. My mother was one of the 1,000 children who came in during the Holocaust as foster children. We only had room for 1,000. England had room for 10,000 children. So we have a long history of not being sympathetic to refugee children. And the second the question is there, what is the reality of the Congress doing something about this and changing the legislation?
Sarah?
So,
and changing the law.
I'm really glad that you raised that story about your mother, Barbara, for a couple of reasons. What's really tragic about that program is that it didn't come about until after the war. There was a bill put to Congress to ask for that program to be instated prior to the war, and Congress declined.
Even 36.
Yep. And it took the Holocaust for us to admit German orphans into our country. So. It's a really excellent point, and I'm so glad that you raised that and that your mother was able to come here. In terms of whether or not Congress will do anything, we'll see. I think that this has been a calculated move by the president. I think there are a couple of pieces at play, one of which is the debt ceiling to pay for the wall. He may be using these children, these young people. We keep saying children, but some of them are in their 20s and late 20s. Using these young people as collateral in a political chess game in order to get what he wants out of Congress in terms of the border wall and other priorities that he has.
My bet is he ain't getting the border wall. But anyway, Barbara, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, now we'll go to Arthur in Vermont. Okay, Arthur in Vermont, you're on.
Yes, sir. Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to have somebody there explain just the difference, because I keep hearing people use different terms. What is the difference between undocumented and illegal immigration? And I'll let you go.
No, stay there. Go ahead.
All right, I'll take this one. First of all, I don't like to refer to anyone as illegal. They're not illegal. That's not a good concept. People enter without inspection. That's how they entered. So basically, they came across whichever border, whether it's the Canadian or Mexico, without being inspected by Customs and Borders Patrol. That's what happened.
But isn't that against the laws?
That is against the law. And what their action is illegal, but they are not illegal.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, their action was illegal. But they are not illegal as human beings. They're undocumented at worst, or entry without inspection.
But basically, it's the same person with different appellations, right?
Exactly.
Arthur, anything?
Thank you. And the only other thing I wondered is, what is the worst thing that would happen to these young people? Is that they would be deported, right? They would not be incarcerated or, you know, they'd be in no peril except to be sent back to the country they came from.
Which could be very, very dangerous.
Exactly.
And not necessarily.
Of course, right. I feel for that.
Yeah, not necessarily. It depends on the deportation procedures used. I mean, there have been a lot of people that are held. We have a local facility at the Albany County Jail. We have immigrant detainees who are being held there until their case can be adjudicated. So there are situations where people could find themselves in jail for a significant period of time before they're able to be deported. I've had clients who have lost their case, who have begged to be deported and have been stuck in jail for months beyond their deportation order.
Okay, Arthur, thank you for that. All right, now we're going to go to Sue in Great Barrington. All right, Sue, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I am really concerned about this. It affects my family personally. And, two things. One, I keep getting people to say to me, my daughter-in-law is having so much problem. She's married to your son, isn't she? But that would you explain that doesn't really help if you didn't, she's a dreamer and she came, so she's not documented. The other thing is, I'm wondering if you think that, say, the Congress gets together, they have a committee, they get some, they get together a bill. Do you think the powers to be would have the nerve not to bring that up for a vote? Those are my two questions.
Okay. Let me start by addressing your first question in terms of the process. So when someone enters a country without inspection, there's two options when you marry a U.S. citizen spouse. The first option is that you can adjust here in the U.S. If you're currently in the U.S., you can apply for a green card in the U.S. But the option is only available if you entered with inspection. So you entered with a F visa, a student visa, you entered on a visitor visa, that's when that option is available. Mm. When you did not, when you enter without inspection, then you need to, you can process, apply for a green card in your home country. This means that the first step of the process, which is your U.S. citizen spouse petitioning for you, can happen here in the U.S. But once that petition is approved, then you have to travel to your home country in order to finish your application process. The problem is this usually takes, you know, can take 3 to 4 months in your home country. But if you, you also have to apply for a waiver for being unlawfully present in the U.S. Huh. That's where they get you. And the unlawful, the waiver requires that you prove extreme hardship to your U.S. citizen spouse or parent, or LPR spouse or parent. And so that's what you have to show, that there's some financial hardship, some sort of medical hardship, something, some reason why you need to return. And that adjudication of that waiver can cause the process to take up to a year. So you could be in your home country for that long waiting for a decision that may or may not go your way.
And with respect to what what Congress might do, I think a quick fix would just be to codify the program as it was enunciated in the first place, with some sort of idea about who can apply, how often. I mean, I wouldn't want to codify this as it is right now because it was such a limited duration. But Congress could pass a version of what Obama put in motion here. Certainly, as a quick fix. What we really need is comprehensive immigration reform to tackle all the other things that Sienna is talking about. Unlawful presence, accrual, waivers, all these, the alphabet soup that we're dealing with. These are all fixable issues. That's going to be a bigger lift.
Thank you very much, Sue. Okay, now we're going to go to Allison somewhere in New York. Allison.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can.
Awesome. So I'm doing an oil painting as I speak, and I was born in America, and my family fought in the American Revolution. And I think that anyone barred from coming into America is just an outrage. But why can't Congress just get with the program, help people, and be reasonable? And if someone's here under DACA, just allow them to do what everyone else did at Ellis Island and take the Pledge of Allegiance to America and be an immediate American citizen. I just don't understand why we can't do that.
Because they don't want to. Because the Congress doesn't want
to. And nonsense. And so then we have to be outraged. But that is,
well, there are a lot of outraged people. There are a lot of outraged people. No question about it. I mean, look, you're right. Of course, it would be great to be able to do all of that. But, you know, there are different people with different political philosophies. And we do know that Donald Trump has about 65% of the Republican Party who still think he's great. And if he is catering to that base, he'll continue to do that. You know, I mean, so you say, why can't you? Well, you know, who can?
Yeah, why can't we? And also, I've graduated now, but, you know, I was a student here. And it's just not okay to suddenly throw out people, but there's no reason for the quandary. They can just become citizens. It's up to Congress to do the proper thing.
Okay, Allison, we got your message. Thank you very much. I'm trying to get to everybody, get everybody, give everybody a chance. Let's see now. That would be, that's a tough one. All right, we'll go to Glenn in Stamfordville. Glenn in Stamfordville, you're on.
Hey, Alan. I take exception to something your guest said, that immigrants come here because they do jobs that Americans don't want to do. And I'm going to tell you quite honestly, there's a lot of jobs I'd like to do, but I can't do them for $12 an hour.
Anybody? Guest?
Well, I think that if I'm hearing you right, I think that goes to our point, right? Is that if you are looking for market-based solutions, here you have one. Here you have the market saying what labor should be rated at, and people who are willing to jump into those labor pools. That's a market-based solution. That's not one that works for you, and it's not one that's working for immigrants either. What we need is a system that's designed on our American values rather than a market-based system that is dictated by corporations and how many dollars they're willing to shell out.
Yeah.
Well, as mayor, I'm a painter by trade, and I'll go in and I'll do an estimate, and I just absolutely cannot compete with, you know, the estimates that these illegals give. It's not fair. Where they come from, they work, you know, they make $2 a day. They come here $9 an hour. That's a lot of money to them. To me, I can't pay my mortgage and everything else I have to pay for that kind of money.
Well, for this particular group of immigrants that we're talking about today, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, the average earnings there are $17 an hour, and 20% of them are in graduate school. So for this topic today, I don't think we're talking about your competitors. But you raise a valid point about labor shortages in certain industries and labor pools in the United States. And I hear you. It's not like Congress is doing the middle class any favors either, and nor are the president's policies. I mean, there's a way to
get... Congress isn't doing anything.
There's a good way to get at both. Raising our poor and our middle class folks raises us all.
Anything? No.
I agree.
Okay, thank you then. We're happy. Now, we'll go to Harry in Dutchess County. Harry, you're on.
Hello?
Hello, Harry. You got to make it short. We're running out of time. Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, what does the law state on the books as far as illegal immigrant? You call them undocumented. That's the wrong word. They are actually illegal. The key here is illegal, and you keep blaming it on the president. But it's been on the books longer than the president has been the president.
Okay,
and thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, and go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I'll open up the statute book for this caller. The term is actually alien. It's a definable term, and it's not, the term illegal is not defined in the immigration code. I can speak with authority on that point.
Well, you are. let's go to Matt in Clarac. Okay, Matt, you're on.
Yo,
man.
I have a question. Why are you arguing about the system? Why not change the system? We seem to get people into the service academy very easily by giving certain appointments to every congressman, every representative, and the president. Why can't we do that with immigration?
Because you'd have a lot more. I mean, if the congressman has one Coast Guard, and by the way, they all have to test out now. So one Coast Guard, one Navy, one Annapolis, one West Point.
You can give them.
$2,000.
You know, 100 green cards each, and have them, give them out to whatever they need.
That wouldn't begin to cover it. But go ahead. Anybody want?
I've got a couple of things. One is they're actually reducing, this administration has actually clamped down on service men and women who have served in our armed forces, like interpreters and translators who have served in Afghanistan and Iraq, have blocked them from actually being able to get immigration status here in the country. So we have service men and women in the United States who have served honorably on the front lines, some who have seen a lot of action and are blocked by this administration from receiving an immigration benefit. And secondly, on the issue of immigration, it's an issue that the federal government has exclusive jurisdiction over. It's called plenary power. We can't solve this problem locally.
Okay. Sia, anything on that? No. You'll pass.
Okay.
That's great. Okay, so anyway, we're getting out of time here. In fact, we are out of time. Let me tell you how we're going to handle this. First of all, I'm going to apologize to Patrick in LaGrangeville, who wanted a realistic estimation for how big the undocumented population is. Anybody know?
11 million.
11 million. Mm-hmm. Jill from Waterford, who wants, what happens to the Dreamers? Are they deported? Yeah, they are. That's
maybe
what will happen, yep, if this goes through. And Katie from Woodburn says, this is disgraceful. Okay, thank you all. We're not going to be able to get to your calls today. I want to thank Sienna Freeman, Tolbert, and Sarah Rogerson, wonderful guests, for joining us today. Support for the Box Pop comes from Love Apple Farm, Route 9H, Ghent, New York, Authentic Mexican Lunch, You Pick Fruit, Petting Zoo, Fresh Market, Cider Donuts, and Bakery. Now open, Love Apple's Art Space, 518-828-5048, the Poughkeepsie Public Library District, encouraging academic endeavors by supporting students, parents, and teachers, POK IKLIB.org. Intrum Healthcare, for 46 years, providing home care for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses serving the greater Capital Region, Columbia and Saratoga counties, and Glens Falls. IntrumHealthcare.com and Curtis Lumber, announcing their new kitchen showrooms featuring kitchen design trends and cabinets from Wellborn and Merrill and quartz countertops from Cambria, CurtisLumber.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Box Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy, working hard today. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Brien. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.